And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. It's 12 o'clock, and The Defenders is brought to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And if you would like to learn more, please visit our website. It is defendersfje.org, or the blog, which is defendersfje.blogspot.com. If you want to give us a call, it's 804-644-5834. And if you want to send us an email, it's defendersfje@hotmail.com. And for those of you who are not clear, FJE stands for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. That, along with the right of peoples to self-determination, becomes the underlying foundation for everything that the Defenders does or considers or thinks about or puts to you. So today is going to be one of those days where I am not alone, you say with relief. Oh, thank God she's got a guest this week. And it's not the editor of the Virginia Defender this week. I'm really delighted actually to welcome to the show Kim Gray. She is a member of the Richmond Public Schools School Board. And Kim, welcome.
Thank you.
I was reading the paper on Friday saw where the draft of the new redistricting plan is at this point going to recommend a combining of districts that is going to then result in the elimination of the district, the school board district that you serve, sort of. So what I really want you to do is clarify my understanding. I'm like, wait, what does this mean? And partly because, you know, you and I have met at various events, and I know that you're a very active and vocal representative of the school board, and that you have some real specific concerns about policy and how it's communicated and how parents are involved or not involved in our children's education. And so the idea that on the one hand, the city's involvement in redistricting, and frankly, it's the state's involvement in redistricting, was going to have an impact where you specifically were going to end up not being a voice on the school board, raised all these little red flags. And so I thought it would be good to have you come on the show and talk about and make sure we all understood what was going on. So if you could talk a little bit about just redistricting and sort of that separation, because as you and I were talking, I was obviously a little confused about what's the redistricting process and why it has an impact on the school board.
Yes, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here. Thank you for the invitation. The current draft that City Council has proposed does not eliminate districts. We will still have 9 wards. We'll still have the same number of districts. It would divide a precinct and move the neighborhood where I live into the 3rd district from the 2nd. So there is a proposal that the Mayor's Commission, which I did serve on initially, the Mayor's Commission put out recommendations for the future. Those recommendations to eliminate districts or to combine districts would have to go before the General Assembly, and it would constitute a charter change. So that would take a whole lot more. And I don't know where I am on whether or not that would be a good idea. And my initial gut would mean that it would take a lot more resources to run and actually get elected in any district, because it increases the number of contacts and the number of mail pieces and doors to knock on that an individual. And any kind of mailing, there's a cost to it. So
there go the campaign funds.
Yes. It's a costly thing to do anyway. The school board, until the 90s, was an appointed school board. So the redistricting process never considered the elected members on the school board because they were appointed. Now that we're elected, there still is no process for the elected members of the school board to have input on the redistricting process. That's all determined by City Council with the mayor's input, because he has veto power over City Council.
I wonder then if there's no formal way for school board members to have input, though. Have you found that they have either informally or in some way tried to provide some input?
Absolutely. And I can tell you, I personally called my council member as well as many others that I have a rapport with, and I was told by a majority of the members that they did not want me put in a different district and that they argued not to do that, and which was a little baffling because it still went forward. But, right. You know, at least six of them said, oh, absolutely not. We don't want you to be moved.
Right, right. So that means there were other considerations, or they were making nice. you know, and we all know that, you know, sort of the political processes are always, or at least, you know, I use that term political process. That's as ambiguous and generic a term as you could apply in any one of these dynamics.
Yes.
And so politics can sound very negative. On the other hand, we all have politics, which means we all have principles that we apply when we're, you know, thinking about these issues. And so the idea, redistricting, of course, if we can, for a second, we'll go to that sort of big level and talk about what does it mean? Why are we looking at redistricting? Why is it important? To me, without any knowledge about what it means at all, I used to think, I don't understand. If it's set, then it's set. How come at somebody's convenience, they get to change how it works and then suddenly, you know, recraft the representation? And that seemed really odd to me. But of course, there's a historical reason for why we have that funny process.
And it feeds off of the census data. So, for instance, the second district grew by over 3,000 members. And that meant that we'd have to lose some of those folks and give them to districts that lost population. So there was a lot of maneuvering and moving around of people. And I think the growth in the second has been a great deal of it has been a result of VCU's growth. So mm-hmm. that's a student population growth. But they are still counted. And now a student can register their address, their voting address at the campus where they live, not at their
permanent home.
Mm-hmm. So that changes the dynamics a great deal of voting
right.
Precincts. And
well, that's interesting because then you're also thinking about, in a way, and maybe not so much anymore, in a way, a student population is a transient population. They come and they go. Maybe, you know, you can say, okay, we can count on this person's vote for 4 years, for example. At the same time, the general public is not quite as stable as it used to be either. So people do move maybe more frequently than they did, say, 40 years ago when people sort of planted their roots and stayed put. But it's an interesting thought that, you know, people who are considered transient have the same, obviously, voting power and can then shape policy for a district that they then leave very quickly.
And in many instances, they have more than just impacted races. They've altered races. For instance, in Lynchburg, where Liberty University is, they can actually change the dynamic and change the results of elections. And I don't know, you know, I have mixed feelings because in my experience with students at VCU, they've been very involved. They've been willing to roll their sleeves up. They work very hard on campaigns. They get involved in their government. And they contribute, and they're here for the time that they're here, but they are a part of the community, mm-hmm. and they're willing to serve. Mm-hmm. So,
and are you, to a certain extent, are you saying that they're maybe more involved because they are more involved than the residents, the longer term residents?
Well, I know we have a lot of students here in the Wilder School for Public Policy and other engaged schools and programs that mm-hmm. get involved in the General Assembly. They get involved in their local governments, and they bring a new approach, new ideas, and their energy level is very mm-hmm. high.
Sure.
Many of the students from Union, VCU, U of R, they serve as interns in City Hall and other places, and they do impact our city in ways that are very positive. So I think the determination of where they vote is left to them, mm-hmm. and many of them choose to vote back home where they
You're right.
they may go to spend the rest of their adult lives.
Right,
but.
Right. Sure. One of the interesting things about redistricting is the idea that, as you say, it's based on census data, but I guess the overall goal is that it's supposed to sort of more equitably distribute the representation. So if you suddenly grow in one area, you're going to want to sort of move people into a district so that there's not suddenly 10,000 versus 2,000 people.
Right. And that's not all telling, because the census data doesn't tell you how many felons there are in a particular area or how many people, for other reasons, may not be registered voters. Mm-hmm. So if you look at a large population, especially a large population of people who are disenfranchised and poor, one can imagine that those populations would have a lower voting population. But all the data looks at is voting age.
Okay.
So you can be 18,
right?
But you could have a felony that prevents you from being able to vote.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean, for instance, Gilpin Court in the 2nd District, which is part of the area that's proposed to be moved to the 3rd District, Gilpin Court has over 3,000 residents, but rarely, even in the Obama election, we didn't have 500 people turn out.
Wow.
So,
yeah, so there has to be a different way to assess how shifting the population between districts
right.
is really going to have an impact. So that's interesting. How are the... what do you see as sort of the impact of the possibility for you, not for you personally, but really for your goals for the school board and its relationship to the children of your district? How do you see this move as impacting that?
Well, I come from a district that's extremely engaged, and the 2nd District has been very supportive of initiatives. Even those who don't have children in Richmond Public Schools are willing to send letters. They're willing to put hours in to help with the budgeting process. They're willing to step up and put themselves on the line for the benefit of all the children in the system. And they, because the district goes from Gilpin Court to Monument Avenue to the Fan, it is the most economically diverse district in the city, and it's racially diverse, and in so many ways it's a good place to get a feel for what the entire city is feeling and needing, mm-hmm. and hoping for. So I think, and from that respect, it's been a really good experience, because I can hear from the poorest residents, mm-hmm. to the most wealthy residents, and understand the dynamics of why people may not send their children to schools, or families that don't have a choice on where they're sending their children and what's happening there.
Right, right. Well, I think we are at the halfway point in the show, and so I'm going to go ahead and let people know that they are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR. It's 97.3 low power FM radio. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us. And if you would like to learn more about the station, you can go to WRIR.org. And if you want to learn more about the Defenders, please visit our blog first at defendersfje.blogspot.com. And of course, to learn more about what we have done and some of that archival documentation, please visit our website at defendersfje.org. We are having a conversation with Kimberly Gray. She is the 2nd District Richmond Public School Board representative, and we're talking about the impact of the redistricting planning on the school board and on your district in particular, because I, like a lot of folks, read in the paper on Friday that it might actually wipe out your seat. Now, I can be personally offended by that, but at the same time, we want to talk about, you know, what that means or could mean And one of the things that we talked about before the show was that one of your goals was to look at how the information was communicated, sort of back and forth. One, how policies are discussed and decisions are come to at the school board level, and then how parents are informed and brought into that process and how effective that has been or has not been. And then aside or along with that is this issue of parental involvement in schools and their children's education. And so I kind of was hoping you could talk to me a little bit about maybe some practical ideas or thoughts that you've had about bridging the gaps.
Well, as a school board representative, I've served on the Head Start Council, which typically serves low-income families, and I can tell you that economics has not played a part in whether or not these parents participate. We have a high level of participation of our Head Start parents, and that's one of the oldest federal programs that started in 1965, and the things that Head Start has figured out about parental involvement, number one, parents need to be asked. You need to build a relationship with them. Any barriers that are in place, we need to work with our families to know what those barriers are to make sure we can abate them. For instance, childcare may be an issue. So the Head Start program provides childcare so that parents can come to the policy council meetings. Food, you know, if I'm a mother of four children and I have to fix dinner after I leave a meeting and then my kids won't get in bed till 10 o'clock at night, I may decide not to come. So right. if you have food available that my children can have their dinner while I'm conducting business, perhaps that's a way to do it. And that's been what I've seen the practices of. I have Fox School in my district, which has a very active PTA, but mm-hmm. they are social, they're child-friendly, and it's the same principle. It's just sometimes it takes a little effort on the part of the school system and the school mm-hmm. to kind of make that happen. Transportation yeah. is another issue.
Right.
So having meetings at a time where people can come and go and feel safe in their communities. If they don't drive cars and there are no buses, then we need to figure out a way to carpool mm-hmm. or provide that transportation.
Right, right. Yeah, we've talked, even in the organizing with the defenders, we talk about, you know, sometimes now we're so reliant on the once removed electronic media, which can be very effective, but at the same time, some traditional ways of dealing with things like calling people, a phone tree,
yes.
And like you say, carpooling and vans. But the idea that there are these very pragmatic ways to address some of the barriers to being able to communicate and being able to stay involved, I wonder what other schools are seeing as a barrier to even thinking that way. The idea that sometimes, as you say, meetings are held at a certain time in the evening. It's been interesting to me to see that everyone has a justification for starting a meeting like at 5 o'clock, when actually most people who have a 9-to-5 job don't get off till 5. So, you know, you're not building for transportation time, or staying 6 o'clock, but nobody's had time to actually eat dinner. And as you say, there's that dynamic, or saying, well, we have to give everybody time to do all of that, then you don't start a meeting until 7 or 8 o'clock at night, which is its own set of dynamics. So I, in terms of the communication that is then conveyed, the fact that when we talk about public hearings are often required for before legislation goes up for consideration. Before, as you said, we're talking about the redistricting, there should be some public hearings coming up. As we've experienced, even with the burial ground struggle and other things, there are supposed to be public hearings, or there should be community opportunities.
Absolutely.
But it will often depend upon the publicity, the public relations, the upfront work that's done in advance, that people even know that a meeting is taking place, that it's done either in advance enough, or that it's even presented in such a way that you understand that it might actually be important for you to be there, that some decision is going to be made that's going to have an impact on you. And it's been presented in such a way that it's just like, it's business as usual, it'll get handled, it's no big deal.
Or sometimes people feel it is a big deal, but they don't feel that their voice has an impact on the outcome. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a little bit of all of that. One thing that did pop into mind that is not an initiative of the school board, but Comcast is providing internet service at low cost to families now within Richmond Public Schools who receive free and reduced lunch. If their child receives free and reduced lunch, they are able to get internet service for $9.99 a month.
Oh, wow.
And I think that will open up a lot of communication avenues. And I believe they're offering computers at $450. So we were presented that at our last school board meeting. And right. I'm not trying to plug one internet service over another, but I know this is a community initiative that they've put forward to try to bring access to the internet into less advantaged communities.
Oh, sure. I mean, we've heard, you know, about the digital divide.
Yes.
And it seems that that's a very logical, you know, solution. And all corporations have some kind of, you know, charitable giving or community outreach programming or something like that. And so that seems a very, very logical thing to do, because we often tell people, well, you can always go to the library. Well, you can't always go to the library.
And the library computers, in my experience, have been limited to on time and on, you know, whether or not you're searching for a job or, you know, those mm-hmm. kinds of things. They don't always open the computers up just for, you know, if you want to sit there and search your local government and take time to see when what the calendar looks like. A lot of times you're shut off before you even have a chance to find it.
Right.
And one thing we have started doing is posting our calendar. It's not where it's easily, readily found on our website.
It's the school board you're
The school
about.
Board, yes. Yeah. You can Google school board and get to Richmond Public School school board and get to the page where our school board site is, and then go to our calendar, and that will give you access to our website, and then the calendar should have documents linked on what we're discussing on that day.
Oh, very good. Like, so agenda or minutes?
The agenda, the minutes, and different other documents that will be presented at the meeting. It doesn't always happen that way, but we are getting a little bit better at doing it.
Right. I'm going to go ahead and let people know that the school board, Richmond Public School site is richmond.k12.va.us, which sounds long and complicated, but it's really just Richmond K-12 and then Virginia and then U.S. So it's pretty easy. And you can always just do a search for it, for Richmond Public School System, and then click on administration and then school board, and that'll take you right to the site. And while I'm here looking at the site, I'll let people know that the school board meets on the first and third Monday of every month, beginning at 4 p.m. in the conference room on the 17th floor of City Hall, and then at 7 p.m. in the City Council chambers on the second floor of City Hall, which is, that says 301 North 9th Street. That's not right.
That actually is the 9th Street side address. We use, for some reason, the school board uses that address.
That address. Okay.
But it's the
can
same
you walk
building.
In that way?
No.
You can't walk in that way. Okay.
Actually, I think that is the entrance you come in on, 9th Street, where you see the school board sign.
You're right, actually. That's right. Okay. Well, so yeah. So again, richmond.k12.va.us. And I think we're getting a sign that they're going to wrap us up in a few minutes.
Okay.
I also wanted to give you the opportunity. Is there, you know, sort of any particular message that you'd want to get across today, or looking, you know, forward towards these conversations about redistricting? And
well, this is not a done deal, and there are hearings. There will be four hearings in August to let folks know. This would be, and which I found out from the article, the first time in history that an incumbent has been drawn out of their district. It's hard not to, not to take it personally. However, it's not a done deal, and it would be great to have folks come and let their wishes and their ideas be known about the process, and perhaps we can make a difference there. And I think the dynamic of racial politics and trying to pack certain races into certain districts and other races, you know, making certain races blacker, other races whiter, I don't know that that's the solution to having minority representation and having a voice, because it's not producing those results, and it hasn't for a while.
Mm. Uh-oh. Okay, so that was just the segue to the next show. And we will plan on doing that. And actually maybe soon, because it would be good, I think, to have these conversations before those meetings begin. Well, Kim, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. And we will do that again, because I think you're right. There's a great disconnect for parents in understanding that their voice, whether they think they've got, you know, all the ins and outs and the rules and regulations and the processes clear in their minds, that their voices are the ones that matter in
Absolutely.
Terms of their children's education. And so we really want to encourage greater ease of accessing the information and the opportunities to have that voice heard. So thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you. This was great.
Yeah. And I want to thank my listeners for tuning in. And remember that you can check, again, the Defenders website for information about upcoming meetings. And then, of course, we will have a link to the school board website so that you can be reminded of when those meetings are and when those public hearings will be happening in August. So, again, thanks for tuning in to the Defenders Live today. We will talk to you next week. Remember to keep up the struggle, that kindness can be a powerful weapon, and that you should use it regularly. Thanks.